Welcome to another episode of Desert Talk. Thank you so much for listening and for, I don't know, I guess supporting me and my endeavors, which I don't really know what those are right now. COVID numbers are kind of off the charts, out of control. I don't really go on CNN too much anymore. And like whenever I need to get COVID information, I'll you know, usually Google it and then click like a link to a newspaper's website. I don't know. I just feel like, you know, if I go off of the LA Times instead of CNN, it'll be like a little, I'll be able to get, you know, more like meat and potatoes information, and less of a scare. But no matter how you look at it, those are some pretty sobering numbers around the country, and I still don't quite know what they are. I'm still planning as of now to go on the road, and to, you know, to go on the road at the end of the month and into early December. I have, a few dates booked in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and also in Austin, Texas. Now I've added, at least one date, and then there's another guest spot that's sort of up in the air. But you know, this reminds me of April, like, or late March when we first went into quarantine and we were, you know, and the state said we're going to be in quarantine until Easter. And I was like, all right, we're probably going to be quarantining well past Easter. But I also remember thinking like, but like, I'm also supposed to be seeing King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard in a few weeks at Berkeley. And then, you know, a couple weeks after that, I'm going to be seeing them in Red Rocks, you know, in Colorado. And I was so sure that I was going to get to see those shows, or not sure, but I was just in denial that those shows were going to get postponed. You know, and that's sort of what I'm experiencing again here with these shows that I'm supposed to be doing in Oklahoma. I mean, the fact that I'm going to be I'm booked on a show that's on Thanksgiving is so weird and cool to me. And I'm really looking forward to that show, because I have no idea what to expect. Thanksgiving at a bar in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Who is going to be attending that comedy show? And are they going to be there for the comedy? I think, you know, assuming that it does still go on, I would imagine that, I mean, really, there should be no expectations. But if, for the sake of making this interesting and building up a little bit of drama, I'll speculate. I think it'll be an interesting mix of maybe four people, who some of them are, you know, are there to see comedy because they're not, they have the decency not to travel home for the holidays, but they still want to experience some entertainment for themselves. And then there are going to be the people that would be at the bar no matter what on Thanksgiving. And, you know, it reminds me of the time I went to a Thanksgiving, I think it was Thanksgiving 2005. My family and I, we'd gone to New York for Thanksgiving, but since, you know, we're a little strapped for cash or just in general cheap, I honestly don't know which is which. We flew home on Thanksgiving Day, because that's when the flights were going to be the cheapest. And we went to, when we landed in Seattle at like 9:30 at night, you know, by the time we got all of our luggage and everything, it was like 10:30. 11 maybe, and we're just exhausted and hungry, because, you know, this is a commercial flight, you know, cabin, main cabin seating. We didn't really eat anything on the flight. Like, I don't even think we got anything at JFK. We were just sort of rushed. I think we barely made the flight as well, because, you know, typical dawdling. You know, that's my household. And so when we landed in Seattle, it was late, we were hungry. We went to 13 Coins. Now, if you don't know what 13 Coins is, imagine like the diviest bar, but with like just that kind of lighting, that kind of atmosphere, just like wood panels on the walls, and like you know like the whole place is wood and dark and just really high ceilings. You know, sort of like if the people who were designing Costco designed a divey restaurant, you get 13 coins. So you got these really high ceilings, and then you have these booths where the backs of them go all the way up to the ceiling. So it looks like you're sitting at a, you know, like it's like a giant having a tea party. It's sort of what it feels like, because, I mean, you know, like my head goes back, and you know, it's not even a third of the way up the back of the booth. Like it's just like a cavern, and I mean, it's just dark, and that's not the point. Is it's not really the mood lighting you want on Thanksgiving. You know, like, I don't know if they still had a smoking section at the time, but it seems like a place that you would expect one there to be. And I was pretty perceptive. I was like, I don't want to have, you know, any sort of Thanksgiving style food from this place. So I just played it safe. I got spaghetti and meatballs. I was like, that'll be fine. It's sustenance. I'm not trying to celebrate shit at 13 Coins, because we are the only unbroken home there. We are the only family that even showed up to have Thanksgiving dinner. Like, I don't think anybody else even ordered turkey. Like, you know, because the people that were there, they were just trying to drink enough to forget that it was even Thanksgiving in the first place. You know, so then my parents, they're just like, well, it's Thanksgiving. What do we eat on Thanksgiving? We eat turkey and gravy and, you know, mashed potatoes and shit. So they order the 13 Coins Thanksgiving dinner. And it was just, it looked so fucking bad. And then they dug into it, and it was just like dried out turkey. You know, the gravy was more salt than anything. And it was just, just a complete catastrophe of a Thanksgiving dinner. Thoroughly depressing to anybody hoping for like a happy finish to that Thanksgiving. Fortunately, I was perceptive enough to set my expectations low. That's why you get spaghetti and meatballs when you know it's not going to be a good day. So that's sort of what I picture this place being in Tulsa, Oklahoma. I think it's the Crow Creek. I think Crow Creek Bars is the name of it. So I'm excited for that, but at the same time, I know with all this COVID shit, it might not happen, because, future, like, more lockdowns could be in play. And, you know, if we get to the point of, where interstate travel is going to be prohibited, you know, or it looks that way. And I guess right now it is starting to look that way, if I'm already starting to think about it. I don't know. Let's try not to manifest these fears. But, it's frustrating. There's also, there are a few comics in Oklahoma that I want to meet. Dustin DeVore, who he's the guy who booked me in Oklahoma. He seems like a really cool dude, and I want to fucking meet that guy. That's a guy I want to know, you know, cool people in the space of comedy, and Dustin sure seems to be that. Also, Jake Bassey, a comic who used to be based in L.A. I never met him personally, but we have, but you know, through my friend Christy Belich, he's a mutual friend, and she thinks the world of him, and thinks, you know, like, that's a guy whose style, whose interests kind of intersect a lot with mine. I I've watched some of his shit. He's got way more energy than I do. But beyond that, like, I was thinking, like, fuck yeah, that's definitely a guy I'd want to get to know, you know, and hopefully perform with and like get to see do his act in person. Like, you know, I love seeing different, you know, different comics, and it's so interesting. The more I get into comedy, the more I realize how many good comics out there aren't that famous. And like, it's fucking hard to make a career out of it, but, you know, but at the same time, it gives me even more appreciation and love for the craft. And, you know, that's why I don't view other comics as competition. I sincerely, because above and, you know, first and foremost, I'm a fan of comedy. It's how I've been able to live my life relatively well. Like, it's given me a bit of an understanding of, like, or it's been able to, it's given me something where I can, you know, not just go off of what I'm told to believe and shit. And, like, it's fun to make fun of this confusing, fucked up world that nobody really understands. And comedy gives me a way to sort of do that, that, you know, I don't know, doesn't make me a doomsdayer. So yeah, anyway, I really want this tour to happen. But I also understand if it won't, cause I feel myself, you know, I feel myself going into this sort of like, you know, no, it can't be stage of denial. Which I guess is just denial. I'm just like in the very early stages of denial of how bad this shit is. And, yeah, I mean, so who the fuck knows? Let's get into some non-speculative shit and just talk about like what's been going on this week. Well, yesterday I was on live TV, in Pittsburgh on the, Pittsburgh Community TV, you know, TV station. I was on a show called Comics on Life, where it was me and two other comics talking with the host, who's also a comic, about, you know, just giving our perspectives, not so much on life specifically, but like we were just answering like these sort of rapid fire questions that were submitted from people on Facebook. And, a lot of the questions, like one of the, you know, we try to answer them in funny ways. You know, I it's hard for me to stray from honesty. So I don't know if I really did a good job of giving like funny answers, but I thought I was, you know, I thought I gave some okay, I thought I answered some questions well, even though they weren't funny. But then there were just some questions where it was just like, why am I even here? Like one was, you know, what was the worst mess you ever made in the kitchen? And I'm just like, why are you asking a comedian this? I mean, like, sure, I do happen to cook, but I don't think the other comics that are on the show cooked, and I don't think most comics are very good cooks if they cook at all. You know, there's a lot of junk food in the comedy scene and shit. And, you know, a lot of people like to eat out, and I don't know. Some people just don't know how to cook, so they don't do it. I happen to know how to cook, and I'm really good at it. And as I'm good at it, I don't really make a mess in the kitchen. So I was just like, why am I here? And, but you know, whatever, it was an experience. it was fun. It was another reminder to me that I need to just trust my gut comedically. Right now, I can't really trust it literally because I'm, you know, all refluxy and I'm burping a bunch. Community TV. Yeah, right. Because, you know, this is one of those things where, like, I know as a comic, I will have to do, you know, like, press and stuff at some point. You know, whenever the country's up and running again, whether that's a year or two from now, who the fuck knows. I mean, like, presumably I'll be able to tour without the fear of a city getting shut down at some point in the future. That's what I trust will happen. That's what I see happening. I mean, like, we can't seriously let COVID be the end of society. That would be fucked. And entirely plausible. But trying to stay positive, trying to see my future here as a, you know, as a stand-up comic and able to make a living on it. And one of those things that I would be doing to help with that is doing, like, local radio shows or local TV, local press to, you know, help sell tickets and get more people to come out, you know, just based on my unique personality. And the way to do that is not going to be by just answering questions, you know, like, quick and easy and, you know, respectfully and things. Like, I'm not saying be disrespectful, but I'm saying, like, I need to actually bring something to the table. Be funny, be different, take some risks, you know. Like they told me before the taping, it's, you know, keep it PG, because it's, you know, community TV. It's, you know, it they have to abide by FCC regulations and stuff, which if you need your show to abide by FCC regulations, you should not have comics come on your live show. I mean, they made a good call by booking me. A relatively inexperienced comic who is afraid of making mistakes and afraid of rejection still on a level. You know, so I didn't want to ruffle any feathers. So I was like, I'll censor myself. I'll be PG. I'll, you know, do all these things that in the past I've told myself never fucking do on principle. You know, obviously you have to work within the confines sometimes, but that said, I do wish I'd still taken a little more risks, been a little more outlandish, just because, like, I didn't like that I was getting upstaged by this other guy who seemed to just take all of the PG stuff out of any consideration whenever he spoke. I mean, first of all, this comic was, like, you know, in his early 60s, a black dude, and he was just talking about pimps and hookers the whole time, and like, that's basically his humor. So it was interesting having that, having that perspective interject in any conversation on community TV, where he's just like, oh, well, you know, I know some hookers who did stuff like that, you know, like, yeah, shit, like, Sharla, she made a, you know, she made a mess in the kitchen, you know, shit like that, stuff that's, like, overly corny and just, like, provocative, but, I don't know. I don't know where I'm going with that. I was just a little bit jealous, and now the more I'm talking about it, the more I realize, like, maybe I shouldn't be, but I'm still, like, a little mad at myself for not, really leaning into anything, you know, and not, like, really trying to, do something. Like, I was just, it seemed like I was just there as a guy, not even there. Like, you wouldn't guess from my answers that I even do comedy. You'd be like, oh, this is probably just a guy who, you know, maybe has, like, a podcast or something where he promotes positivity and shit. And you know what? They're right about that. But primarily the reason I even have that podcast is so that I can just fill, you know, get all of the shit out of my head before I get on stage. And now that we're in quarantine, and I've been mostly in quarantine for the last 8 months, fucking 8 months now. It's insane. You know, but now that I've been in quarantine mostly for the last 8 months, like, I need to podcast as a verb to, just keep thoughts flowing out of my mouth without really thinking that hard about them, and basically just trying, you know, trying to channel whatever comedic spirit I need to make whatever it is that I say funny, you know, try to inflect in the right places and shit and, you know, come up with punchlines, you know, on a whim. I need to be quick when I'm on stage, and the only way that I can do that is by getting all the shit out of my head on a podcast, while also trying to talk myself up and, you know, keep from getting too depressed. So that was a tangent I didn't mean to go on, but, yeah, I mean, it's, and I guess the reason I've been so critical of myself just in how I've been doing on, you know, like on these shows and stuff is that on Monday I was on Kill Tony, which is, you know, the number one live podcast in live comedy podcast in the world. It's, I mean, like if you know, if you're in stand-up comedy, you know, Kill Tony, show out of the Comedy Store. So like I don't know what kind of stroke I just had, but on Monday, I performed for the first time in the main room at the Comedy Store, technically. You know, there's basically no crowd there because, you know, there aren't any crowds anywhere indoors in California. But, you know, I got to do the show, which is just 1 minute of stand-up material, followed by, you know, about an 8 minute interview or so. I did okay. I didn't feel like I did well, but, other people told me that I did. And that was cool, because the people who told me I did well are comics that I respect a lot. And, you know, I don't really want to say their names, the comics that said I did well, because, like, I don't know why. I don't, like, this whole week, I've just been trying not to get too wrapped up in the whole Kill Tony thing, because to this point, it is probably, it is the biggest thing I've done for my stand-up career. And it hasn't aired yet. It'll air on November 30th on YouTube. It's the biggest thing I've done for my career so far in stand-up, and I've felt like I blew it. You know, just in that I wasn't that comfortable. I sort of, you know, let my guard down. I didn't really get in the moment. I started, like, getting in my head about it, like, oh man, what do I even do? Because it is an intimidating room in general. On top of that, you have Tony Hinchcliffe, Brian Redban, and the guest, and since this is, you know, coming out before the episode airs, I'm not gonna drop the name of the guest who was there, but out of respect for the, you know, whatever surprise element the Kill Tony show wants to maintain, I have no idea. But then then there's the band, which is a four piece, and they constantly interject, you know, with jokes of their own. And so basically I'm dealing with seven people, and all of their, you know, little hijinks. It is a fucking nightmare for anybody with ADD. You know, and like I hadn't meditated beforehand. I hadn't psyched myself up to, you know, really focus on the moment and try to, interject. I was too in my head. I couldn't react. I wasn't giving really great answers. At one point, the Kill Tony Band drummer, Joel Jimenez, he said, you seem like you're the most interesting dude and most boring dude at the same time. And that was so fucking poignant. Because that is what I was bringing to the table. You could tell there was a lot there. Anybody who knows me, you know I'm an interesting guy. This is an objective truth. I am an interesting guy. And the fact that I wasn't able to actively convey, really unpack or unravel anything to show how interesting I am, that gave me some regrets about how I did. And I guess it's just that nobody, people don't have the same expectation of me that I have of myself. And I think that's true with any creative person, especially one with anxiety and, self-doubt, worries, any kind of perfectionist, I guess, that, hasn't been meditating every day frequently enough. But yeah, anyway, I'm going to get some water. So I'm headed to LA today, which is Saturday. I'm going to be doing, one of my friends just got a new place out in the surrounding area, North Hollywood. And he's doing a show in his backyard. So I'm still going to be doing, I'm still preparing for the road as if it's going to happen. And even if it doesn't, I have felt such an urge to get back on stage and, basically redeem myself after what I felt was kind of a bomb on Monday. There's some new material I want to try out. And I have been in sort of a creative flow. I think I mentioned that, last weekend. It's still here. I'm still doing a bunch of shit. I've been writing some new music still and just starting to get shit done. I went for a hike yesterday. I'm just basically trying to keep myself active. Like a few episodes ago, I talked about how I was struggling with how I felt I was struggling with my weed addiction, or whether it's an addiction or a habit. It's kind of up for debate. And the thing that worries me about weed is that, it does, because it does calm me a lot, which is that's good because I have an overactive, anxious mind. It is good for the calming effects and helps slow me down enough to where I can kind of think, a little more clearly in some ways. More clearly than I can when I'm panicked, but obviously the clearest I'm going to think is when I'm sober and, I'm meditating regularly and doing all these mindfulness exercises and shit. But weed is an okay stopgap. But my point of bringing that up is, that it does have some impact on ambition, or, you always hear people say that. And especially when I am stoned, and I do get in my head, I'm just like, shit, I'm not doing enough. I'm not writing enough. I'm not, playing enough music. I'm not being creative enough. It's sort of a double-edged sword, because the reality is I'm doing quite a bit for myself in stand-up. Shit is in motion and it's happening, and whether or not I'm able to, see the opportunities all the way through because of COVID, I think I would be able to, the point is shit is in motion, shit's happening, and I don't anticipate. What I try to do with this momentum is just ride it, into whatever kind of, I don't know, whatever kind of thing I'm actually trying to manifest, and I don't know what that is. You know, like I know on the surface it's a comedy career, but specifically what that is, it is yet to be seen. Like, I don't think I'm a club comic, you know, like a typical club comic. Cause like I interject like all these sort of like trippy or dreamy thoughts and well, not because of that. That would actually go quite well. It's just that I haven't been writing short form jokes. I kind of struggle with the whole punchline thing. It's more, and like I said last week, I would probably do really well in the UK, because they love this kind of, you know, shit where you just drag everything out and like just focus on like the nitty gritty, you know, like the little things, which is, you know, that's my fucking bread and butter. I don't know where I was going with that, but oh yeah, right. Point is, things are happening. And I need to not be in my head so much. I read my horoscope this morning on the CoStar app, and you know, I've heard CoStar isn't the greatest astrology app out there. It might be the greatest app, but it doesn't quite meet all the, like, I don't know if you're into astrology, CoStar is, I guess, like the basic bitch move of astrological readings you can get. You know, it's an app, you can read your horoscope every day. Sometimes it has been right on the money for me. Like back when I was in New York, a couple years ago, there was this period of time where like I was just getting all these people reaching out to me, just hitting me up, like, you know, people that I hadn't talked with in months or years, or, I mean, just everybody just coming out of the woodwork. And then I checked my horoscope on the CoStar app, and they were just like, you're experiencing a lot of people coming to you in ways that, you know, there's some like sort of spooky language and some sort of like mysterious sort of language where they're saying like, you know, people are, coming out of the woodwork, you know, from all, you know, facets of your life. They're going to be reaching out to you, this week. It's a great week to socialize, and you should explore that as much as you can because it's not going to last. I've never since then have I gotten so many texts out of the blue, that were all sort of meaningful. I don't know. So that's like one example of how they got shit right. But like a lot of the time, like it seems to more be a way to me, it sort of feels like the app is trying to dictate how you feel. Like instead of saying you might be feeling, they said you are dealing, like they're so certain that I'm dealing with all these, you know, like self-doubt things and everything. And maybe from listening to this podcast, you would 100% agree with that. And one of the things that the app told me to do was podcasts. They're just like, they have the list of the do's and don'ts. And, you know, fuck it, I'll pull it up. What are these do's and don'ts? Come on, work. There we go. So the do's are podcasts, dictionaries, and unread emails. Well, I don't have any unread emails. They're all, I keep up to date pretty well on that. Don't overthink. They say don't body language and don't betrayal. I guess don't do the, what do they mean don't do body language? So it's shit like that where I get confused. Like, don't do, like, they're saying don't read body language? Are they telling me I should just go to a Botox clinic with a gun and demand that they give me Botox injections into every feasible part of my body so that I have no body language? Is that what I'm supposed to do? Just turn myself into a, you know, a mummy? Or whatever the fuck Botox does? And yeah, and betrayal, I don't have any plans on betraying anybody. I'm usually not the one to betray, you know, without just cause, like, and at that point, it's not really a betrayal. It's like, oh, wait, no, I should not have you in my life, but I haven't had to do that in a while. So I don't know what this horoscope is all about, but you know, this isn't totally accurate. It says, are you blocking your own creativity? And no, I'm not. But it's trying to make me do that by asking me, I think. Maybe that's just paranoia. But, yeah, and then it says, reach out to some friend about experimental thinking. I mean, yeah, I would love to study experimental thinking with another person. That would be great. But I've been spending quarantine alone for the most part, and, yeah, I don't know where I was going with that. Am I seriously just, like, out? It doesn't feel like I should be out of stuff to talk about, but I might be. And I don't even know if I wrapped up that loose end of a thought. I mean, because basically that whole last segment was just me being all up in my head and talking about horoscopes and shit and not really have any idea what it is I'm talking about. Is this whole podcast just like me saying, I have no fucking clue what's going on with anything, but just spoken in like these, you know, just a series of sentences of like platitude sentences. I'm just like, well, it is what it is, but in way more words than just that overused, you know, empty idiom. fuck, man. I mean, there isn't, well, oh, you know what? There is some stuff going on in baseball. This has been a fun week in baseball. This is a fun pivot. We'll go into baseball. Tony La Russa. I mean, this is just a funny fucking story. So a couple weeks ago, or maybe it was last week, the Chicago White Sox hired Hall of Fame manager Tony La Russa to be their new manager, taking over for Rick Renteria, who, by the way, they let go only to see him place in the top three. He placed as a finalist for manager of the year in the American League, and he gets fired. It doesn't make any sense, but you know, whatever. That's what happened with Joe Girardi in 2006 after he won manager of the year with the Florida Marlins. He had a disagreement with the ownership, and they were just like, all right, bye-bye, Joe Girardi. And then he went on to manage in New York, where he won a World Series in his second year. Or was it his first year? I forget. I think 2008 was Girardi's. I forget when Girardi took over for manager. I'm just going to look this up because this is something that I have to know. Managerial record. Baseball Reference for the win. Right. 2008 was his first year managing. And then in his second year, they won the chip. So that was fucking cool. Joe Girardi was a good manager. I don't care what anybody says. He was good. And in any case, so Tony La Russa gets hired by the White Sox. Just sort of an inexplicable thing. I guess he does have tight relations with That's a weird way of describing a friendship. Tight relations. But honestly, the whole thing is weird. It, like, Tony La Russa has tight relations with Jerry Reinsdorf, the Reinsdorf, something like that. He's the owner of the Chicago White Sox. You know, because La Russa used to manage them back in the 1980s, which that's like 30 to 40 fucking years ago. No, that's 40 fucking years ago. I mean, you shouldn't be, I don't know what they're doing. This is like a shitty reboot. They're going for like the nostalgia factor, and I don't get it. But maybe I do get it, because nostalgia is fun. We love familiarity, and one thing that Tony La Russa did in his heyday when he was managing the St. Louis Cardinals, he fell asleep at a traffic light and was charged with a DUI. This is back in 2007, and that was like a whole thing. And like, I've seen Tony La Russa fucking hammered, you know, whether it's at the winter meetings or when it was in my autograph collecting days in New York. He'd come back at like 2:30 in the morning to the team hotel, just, you know, just reeking of whiskey, and or whatever the fuck he was drinking. It might not have been whiskey, but you know, he just had that like glazed look in his eye, like fuck, I'm pretty sure I'm at the right hotel. So anyway, it just came out that he got a second DUI last February, and he was only just recently brought up on charges through some weird delay, since I think this was in Scottsdale, Arizona, which I've had some experience with Scottsdale, Arizona police. They fucking suck. But you also shouldn't be drinking and driving. So La Russa was, he was arrested for that back in February, and he, you know, he was basically, you know, reading them the riot act of like, you do know who I am in baseball and all that shit. And to a Scottsdale cop, to any cop, when like Tony La Russa is just a drunk old man who maybe shouldn't even be driving sober. I mean, he's like any aging adult, like any aging boomer, just thinks they have, they still have it all together. And then the more that they run their mouth, the less sense they make, and the more you worry. And so with La Russa, he was hired a couple weeks ago. The White Sox knew of this DUI arrest, and they were just like, you know what? We can weather this PR storm. This will be fine. It'll blow right over. And you know what? It probably will. But it's only the first thing of what's sure to be an absolutely wild year for the Chicago White Sox in 2021. I don't know what will happen first, La Russa is fired or Tim Anderson asks for a trade. It's going to be interesting. The hire made absolutely no sense. Tony La Russa is an old school baseball man. And the White Sox, led by the likes of Tim Anderson, newly anointed MVP Jose Abreu, Luis Robert, Yoan Moncada, Eloy Jimenez, and Yasmani Grandal, a whole bunch of more White Sox players are really good. Lucas Giolito. I mean, the White Sox have a really good team full of young, promising players. And they put in this, they installed this old school manager who is, he's very much a my way or the highway kind of guy. He's not going to mix well at all with that clubhouse. The fact that Tim Anderson, like a week after La Russa was hired, Tim Anderson was asked, like, hey, have you spoken with the new manager yet? And he was like, nope, haven't heard from him. We'll see how it goes. And, you know, that's not a great, that should not give White Sox fans much to cheer about. You know, because, like, obviously you want to keep rooting for your players that are on your team, but those players might quit on their manager if he's not reined in quickly somehow, or, you know, in some way, shape, or form. I don't see it happening. You don't change the minds of somebody who already is in the Hall of Fame because of his baseball mind, he thinks. You know, the reality is it's all perception. It's mostly perception of how you do your job. Whether you're actually doing it well as a manager, it's pretty easy to get muddied up. That said, La Russa has gotten opportunity after opportunity, and like he's like in the top five. I think he has the second most managerial wins in baseball history. So, I mean, he's up there on the list. You know, obviously, Connie Mack is, you know, he's the top. You're never going to see a manager with that kind of longevity ever again. Anyway, shit's going to boil over in Chicago, I feel. And it's going to suck to be a fan because I have a feeling that the ownership would have an easier time moving players than they would about, you know, like, I guess, you know, being proven wrong and having to fire the manager. I don't, so anyway, I know not everybody that listens to this podcast is, you know, are baseball fans, and perhaps those of you who I'm describing now have already tuned out, but that's okay, because I think this is about good for this week. I'm still going to be, you know, as of now, I'm still going to be in Tulsa, Oklahoma, November 25th and 26th, and then in Austin, Texas, after that until December 2nd. And you know, the closer we get to those dates and I find out more about, you know, what's going on COVID-wise, you know, I'm sure I'll update. And should shit somehow work out, then I'll be posting the dates. That'll be places, and I'll be talking more about them, and I'll be doing more to promote those shows. So anyway, until then, stay safe and have a great week. See you next time.